The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mai, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. Our daily dose of public opinion, public comment, your chance to access the airwaves and have your say on anything you want to today, because we're open line through till 1. Text, email, call and WhatsApp. Text and WhatsApp 166177. For a WhatsApp, by the way, you'll need to have us in your contacts. Email studio at maxradio.com, call 66 13 68. The Lord Street development, still lots of talking points. And also what to do now with Summerland. It's coming into sharp focus. It is 18 years. I didn't think it was that long. 18 years ago since Summerland was demolished. Closed in 2004, demolished in 2006. Wow. Doesn't seem that long ago, but it was. So what do you think we should do? The lady who says she's going to sit in front of a bulldozer if there isn't any form of commemoration, if anything's done. Well, if anything's ever done. It's been this long, hasn't it? We'll see. Is David with us now? Hi, David.
Hi, Andy. Just to clarify, it's my own personal opinion, not an opinion of anything I'm connected with. Right? I'll make that statement clear. It's to do with the Housing Board. Now, I listened to a little clip on Manx Radio and a news item there that said that the Treasury Minister and the Enterprise Minister give the Board direction. And I'm sure you'll probably confirm that, or you've heard it, something like that. So now we know who's actually running the Board. So why can't we get information from them if two major politicians are in charge of it?
Well, they're going to this report's supposed to be published. It's going to be made public and everybody will know everything that's recommended.
Well, yeah. When? I mean, this is the issue is. I mean, they're looking at all sorts of things, and the guy was saying they'd looked at Summerland as well. And I just wondered, if the two politicians are in charge, they probably go back to the Council of Ministers. What is the direction from the Council of Ministers to the Board? And which priority did they give? Did they give priority to the QB or the pub down at Derby Road there, or the Summerland site, or the old prison site, or the school? The old school there? I mean, I'm at a loss, and I'm sure everybody else is at a loss.
Well, it seems as though these brownfield sites are just queuing up to have something done with them. And as you say, there is this housing, the report is out. I mean, Mr. Ashford said he didn't want it to sit on a shelf collecting dust. It needs to be acted upon, he said last week. On Man in Line, he wants a new social housing estate built as soon as possible. Something, and then they say we need 15,000 extra people, and quite where they're going to live, Nobody knows.
Well, the other thing is, don't forget the old Jane and the old nurse's home there, is they are definitely a landlord. So who's in charge of it? Who's going to do the appointments? Who's going to say it's going to be rented? It's going to be leased for a little while? And the same thing happens at Glenside, which is now called Summerhill Views. Why can't people get into that particular facility and enjoy life? Do we need to transfer them in the winter? The answer is no. And there was a lady on Facebook saying that she wanted a mother to get into the place and settle down for the summer and enjoy life.
And also, I mean, as well as you say, Summerhill Views, what's going to happen to Riatna Bay? What's Albert Terrace? That's a big site there. And of course, it's prime building land just down the road, Derby Square. I mean, those renovated houses are going for seven figures now in Derby Square.
Yeah. The same thing is, it's given then to the Housing Board, or it's in their portfolio. But at the end of the day, it's actually owned by the government. and the government are custodial people to spend the money than what the population want. The population wants housing, don't we? We probably want another sheltered unit somewhere else on the island, or two sheltered units.
Oh, I mean, David, it's been said we need a care home built per year.
Yeah, yeah. And I can't believe, really, that, I mean, when I left the Parliament out in 2016, all of plans were there. There are loads of plans on the shelf ready to pull off, dust down. Why do they need to go back into architects again and have them reviewed or looked at again? It's called succession planning regarding housing as well, isn't it? Not housing, but occupying some hill views. One would have thought we need X amount of carers, some nurses, a matron or a senior manager. Where are we?
Well,
we're nowhere.
I mean, recruiting staff for care homes relies largely on immigration. It's a well-known fact. I mean, getting people, anybody, to work in the amount of people you need for care homes, we have no hope of recruiting them internally.
Yeah. And the other major thing to push out there, too, is how much are we actually investing in our own students and people who are not going to university, and saying to them, look, there's a good job in government here. You can be a tradesman, plumber, electrician, joiners, so forth, all the way through. A good labourer is worth his salt on a building site. And we need to get some of those Manx companies involved in building some of them instead of dragging these UK builders over here and just taking the jobs. All right?
Interesting. Yep, good point of view. Thanks for calling today.
Bye.
Good to hear from you. 13 minutes past 12. Well, Summerland, and this is a WhatsApper, 985. Summerland was demolished in 1996, not 2006. No, I mean, the kind of new slimmed down Summerland was... no, that went on, I think, into the 21st century, didn't it? Because I remember... Do you remember the old cinema in Summerland? We'll see. But what's going to happen to Summerland? Of course, the darn thing has been sitting empty for years and years. There have been various proposals. I think there was certainly an on-island developer that wanted to build stuff there. But the moment the word apartments appeared, public opinion turned against it. That was 15, maybe 20-odd years ago that happened. So what should happen? That was the kind of remnants of the old Summerland. So nobody quite said, whatever happened to the aerotone baths that went out of the health club at the Summerland? They were fantastic, those aerotone baths. Juan's on now. Hi, Juan.
How you doing, Andy? It's the Trump-supporting, misogynistic, tinfoil-hype conspiracy theorist back on for you.
Well, I'm glad you know which drawer you come out of.
Oh, I'll tell you what, top draw today, top draw. There you go. just mentioning, I've got to be quick. I've got another delivery coming. The pandemic treaty that Julian was talking about yesterday.
Yeah.
Just an update on that. It never met its deadline yesterday. So it's been put back. But the concerning thing is, I mean, we've spoke about this many times on this programme and it's popped up, but it always seems to be a new conversation every time we do it, and it doesn't gather pace. And it quite interests me that the government are quite happy to write letters in to support the Israeli and Palestine movement, but something as important as this, they seem to be really quiet about. But just the update on that. But it is being put back.
Okay. Well, for new listeners, just give us the pen portrait of what it is what you're saying.
And basically, I'm only repeating what Julian said yesterday, that the treaty was basically taking out the decisions from local governments and parliaments. And to impose any regulations on further vaccinations, lockdowns, basically that's the overall of it. It goes deeper than that. And given all that permission to the World Health Organization.
Yeah. Well, they were changing the word may to shall, weren't they?
Yeah, and again, as Julian mentioned there, it was an opt-out. And there's a lot of this happening at the moment. As you know, if you don't say anything, like I've said to people, governments take this here to for granted. Now, if you don't say anything, they take it that you agree. So, you know, you need to, and governments are the same here, need to opt out of these things and stand up and say, no, this is not for us. Luckily enough, we got away with it this time, I think. The other thing I wanted to jump onto as well, which, of course, it's been spoke about as well on this programme, is a YouTube video that came out yesterday from netoffice.co.uk, and it's called Injecting Skies, and it's all about geoengineering. Now, I remember you said a while ago, we put this to bed on this programme when someone mentioned it a while ago, and I'm just wondering who you put that to bed with. Was it Bonsai? Sorry, Bonzo, that's a restaurant, isn't it?
Which bit are you talking about? You're talking about the, we were talking about, was that talking about seeding clouds for rainfall, or was it about chemtrails?
It's the whole lot combined together. I mean, we're looking at a company in England that's actually paying planes to put this stuff into the sky. And also this release, well, so I think it's 2 days ago on the Met thing. So there's definitely something going on with geoengineering. So I just like to put it back in the ball court when people go on about conspiracy theories and try and knock it down, that this stuff is actually happening. So, and I haven't checked out Bonzo's £25 burger yet, because obviously we need to make sure that we've got valid points on this, and we're not conspiratorial. So I must check that out. But on that point, I think the government or the organisers of the TTIP put an extra £1,000 on the traders up there this year for their stands. So you can't have it always. If government are going to rake this money in, then the people are going to have to charge extra to the people for the stuff, I think.
Well, and also, I mean, it should be pointed out, if people don't want to buy expensive burgers, they've only got to walk about 400 yards, and there's a big supermarket on Victoria Road.
Vote with your feet, absolutely. And it'd be nice if the government or the people in charge turned around and said, like, you know, we're going to have local traders here first. And maybe, yeah, like these agricultural show does, they have their own people doing catering, and it brings money into our community rather than people taking money out of the community, and let local people do that and give them first chance. To try and keep ourselves going. We're talking about, you know, making the money go around. That might be more of an idea as well, rather than trying to get every last penny out of everything. You know, just like let's get the community up and running and do some community spirited stuff. I'll leave it at that today, Andy. I've got to shoot off, but I'll speak to you soon.
Thanks for calling today. It's good to hear from you. 19 minutes past 12 on Manx Radio.
Hello, it's John from Ramsey. We're talking about the Summerland site. It's terrible that it's over 50 years now that nothing's been done with the site. It's very hurtful, not only for local people, but for people coming over who have had experience of what's gone on there after Summerland's tragic accident. Now, they were saying about suggestions for what to do with the site. I think it'd be quite nice if they could have two nicely designed apartment blocks, and then either side, and then in the centre, you could have the memorial that's, you know, 100 metres down the road. That could be transferred over and put in a nice garden in the centre. I think that'd be quite nice. But it's about time something was done. It's a horrible reminder of what's gone on. All right, thank you.
Good to hear from you. Thanks for that. So what do you think? Two blocks of flats with a garden in the middle? What do you think should happen? Tina Brennan, of course, is one of the campaigners, justice campaigners for victims. She witnessed the building burning from the cliffs above Summerland. And of course, 3 years after the fire, the new Summerland, on a smaller scale, was built in its place. What possibly you may remember of Summerland wasn't the original Summerland. It was a smaller Summerland, and it was there till it closed in 2004 and knocked down in 2006. If you walk along the northern point of Douglas Prom, the ruins are still there against the cliff face. You can see the tiles from the swimming pool. You can see where the diving board used to be. So this is what Tina Brennan has to say about what to do with Summerland.
Moment, it's in the hands of the MDC. So, Yeah, I mean, it's ludicrous. It's ludicrous. That site has been for sale. Next year, it'll be 20 years. 20 years of it being derelict with nothing, no developers stepping forward. And why would they? There's too many issues. It needs to be properly recognised. And we will make sure that it is properly recognised. Because I can tell you now that if a bulldozer goes onto that site to turn it into anything other than a substantial memorial proportionate in size to this tragedy,
loss of life,
yeah, then I will be standing in front of that bulldozer with as many people as I can get, as much press as I can get here and in the UK. And yeah, we will make sure that this goes ahead. That's one of our aims of the campaign, is the sighting of a proportionate memorial on that site, and also the overturn of the death by misadventure verdict. And that's what we will achieve.
There you are. That's Tina Brennan talking about what she thinks should happen to the Summerland site. Proportionate memorial. And as John said, maybe if you're going to build anything, put a garden in the middle and take the Summerland Memorial from where it is at the bottom of Summer Hill and put it there. What do you think about it? Text, email, call and WhatsApp. Summerland has been in and out of the news ever since that fire. Crystal, thank you, Crystal, for your note, who just said there's a letter which can be used by our government as a legal instrument to opt us out of the WHO pandemic plan. It's written by Dr. Sylvia Berendt of the World Health Responsibility Agency. We need to make our government use this to protect the Isle of Man from losing our human rights and our democracy, says Crystal. Thanks also for that. Regarding the Summerland site, Roger dropped a note in to say, will those campaigning for a memorial on the site be paying for the site and also the memorial and its upkeep, says Roger. Well, the Manx Development Corporation, the government, if you like, owns the site. What's going to happen? Thanks to Desmond, who said, it's £25 for a hamburger because it's due to global warming. Perhaps if it were an insect burger, it will be cheaper, perhaps. And Julian's on. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. Yeah, sounds quite stratospheric, those burger prices, doesn't it?
Well, it's not compulsory to buy a burger, is it?
No, no. I mean, perhaps it's a gourmet burger. Perhaps it needs a bit more investigation but try one out, see what it's like. It might be the best thing since sliced bread.
And let's face it, the people who've got those pictures are paying an arm and a leg to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. No, no. It's the way things seem to be going these days. Perhaps we should stop having this war and then we can get our supply chain prices all the way back where they should be. I totally sympathise with Tina Brennan. I can hear it in her voice. You know, it's something that was that. If anyone looks on YouTube, it just puts in Summerland fire. I mean, you know, it was quite something. Speaking of the surname Brennan, I'd like to comment on a letter on page 12 of yesterday's Examiner newspaper, written by Kate Lord Brennan, regarding the assisted dying bill. Kate highlights the potential consequences of the bill, especially in its current form. Kate says that the amendment that she had proposed, but was ultimately rejected, would have given greater oversight and prevented taxpayer funds from being prioritised for assisted dying over palliative care. Now, that was a concern I voiced yesterday, especially if the Isle of Man were to follow Canada's 10% take-up of assisted suicides, which would potentially enrol 90 people on the island per year, which at 10,000 a head, which we've looked at pricings, would cost the taxpayer close to £1 million per annum. And not forgetting as well the potential tsunami of people from the UK if the Isle of Man were to follow Oregon's recent example of waiving residency requirements, which would make assisted suicide legislation here a bit of a money pit for the taxpayer. Kate also mentions that unlike the current proposals, her amendments were supported by the Isle of Man Medical Society and Manx Duty of Care, who, like me, have grave concerns given the repeated loosening of legal safeguards in all the other assisted suicide jurisdictions. And remembering that just last week, yet another physically healthy woman, 29-year-old Zoraya Terbeek, was euthanized because her psychiatrist told her there was no hope for her autism.
Whereabouts was that?
In Belgium. Zoraya Terbeek, Zoraya Terbeek, quite an easy name. Just put the name in and it comes straight up across 30 hits straight away. But this begs the question, if Manx Duty of Care, full of doctors, the Isle of Man Medical Society, full of doctors, and the lead geriatrician on the island are being ignored, exactly who are the government listening to? The final part of Kate's letter reads, the bill is not fit for purpose. It is not safe. And those advocating for it need to put a lot more work into it and start explaining things if they are so set in their beliefs. It's not enough, though, just to have beliefs or rehearse arguments of compassion when initiating something like this in law and at state level, when you are literally dealing with whether someone may live or die at the hands of someone else.
Yeah. So what's your view of the letter?
I think she hits a lot of very, very pertinent points. It just seems that on the one side, there doesn't seem to be any kind of recognition that all the experts have grave reservations about this.
Hmm.
So I'm just wondering, who is the government listening to if we're ignoring Isle of Man Medical Society, Manx Duty of Care, and the lead geriatrician on the island? She also says that creating a legal possibility for something is different to providing it. And she thinks that this is not being grasped by Keys. So, you know, there's this this idea that when you have an option, that will then become an expectation and then an obligation, especially if you've got people claiming discrimination who aren't terminally ill.
Well, I don't know whether you heard yesterday, whether you heard the lady Sue call in, you know, the one whose husband, Simon, died a horrible death. He was... debilitating death as well. So, well, you know my position on this, Julian. I sit very much in the middle. I have no opinion on this at all, because it seems to be that, you know, when people are touched by people who have dreadful deaths, then they, you know, there's an opinion that's formed on this. And in the middle, I think the vast majority of the public don't quite know what to think of it all.
No, but I think most people would agree you have to keep the emotion away when you're soberly debating legislation for anything.
And that's the key, Julian, is keeping the emotion out of it. And how on earth you keep the emotion out of it is, you know, it's difficult.
Yes. And, you know, as well, I mean, Kate, I mean, she's got a degree with honours in law and European studies from Leeds University. So she's highly qualified in law. So we should be listening to people who know what they're talking about, including Kate, including the medical society over here, Manx Duty of Care. I mean, you know, the Q's in the name, isn't it? Care. You know, they care about this, and I don't understand why they're not being listened to.
Okay. All right. I appreciate
just
that,
before, just before I go, Andy,
okay.
I just noticed a newsflash from Reuters. Completely different. Siemens are mulling plans to axe 4,100 jobs at its wind turbine arm, which represents a loss of 15% of its workforce. Siemens Energy boss Jochen Eichholt told in a message seen by Reuters, "We have to adapt to lower business volumes." This follows an announcement for Siemens Energy and the FT of losses in 2023 amounting to €4.5 billion from its wind turbine arm, following a previous loss to the company of €6 billion.
Times are changing for Siemens, it would seem then.
Yeah, and it's dead easy to find. Just do an internet search for Siemens Energy to cut 4,100 jobs from wind turbine unit, and it will come straight up with the Reuters webpage.
Okay, all right. Thanks, Julian. Good to hear from you.
Thanks, Andy. Cheers.
Here's a note in from Charles who said, regarding the Summerland site, apparently they can't demolish the remaining structure due to concerns about the stability. There was nothing there. About the concerns about the stability of the cliffs. In that case, why not place large boulders there, cover them with shrubbery and let the site return to nature? Better than what's there now. Well, anything's better than what's there now, isn't it? By all means, place a memorial there to the fire victims. I don't think there should be any development, says Charles. Thanks, Charles, on 598. Thanks for your opinion. I don't know if you've ever walked on the site. A while ago, they used to use it for, I think, some of the fairground residents. The caravans used to be there. It is enormous. It's an enormous site. And, of course, goes up, three, four, five, six, seven, eight stories. So quite what to do with it, and whether or not you think the whole site should be a memorial to the people who lost their lives at Summerland, or whether or not you think it's owned by the Manx people, we should use it and possibly make some money out of it and put a memorial as part of it. Anyway, you got any thoughts on this? Oh, talking of renewable energy, we were talking about Siemens and what's happening to the wind turbines. I don't know whether you've seen, there's a video going around by a guy called Paul Burgess, who's talking about renewable energy. And basically, Paul Burgess talks about, well, his main thrust of his argument is how wind turbines on the Isle of Man will basically raise the cost of our energy. And, of course, anybody who uses electricity in the future, if we have the number of wind turbines that are suggested, we'll all pay it. So anyway, Paul Burgess is coming over to the Isle of Man in a few weeks' time. It's going to be on Man in Line. If you've not spotted the Paul Burgess video, take a look. Just put it into your search engine. Paul Burgess, it's on renewable energy about the Isle of Man. And he talks about the cost, and particularly the off when... there's no demand for electricity on the Isle of Man, but we're still generating electricity. And who gets the money for the electricity that we no longer use because it's an off-peak period? Interesting. But anyway, Paul Burgess, I think, is going to be giving a couple of talks as well. But he's going to be on Man in Line. And before that, Kate Lord Brennan and Tim Crook, all the final of our constituency MHKs, Glenn Faber and Peel MHKs, Kate Lord Brennan, the aforementioned, and Tim Crook all will be on Friday the 14th of next month. Let's get to the phones now. And Millie's with us now. Hi, Millie.
Oh, hi. How do you do? Can you hear me all right?
Loud and clear, Millie, go ahead.
Okay. I would just like to mention that because I joined Voluntary Euthanasia, which was in the offices in Wales when I was in my very early 30s, because I was concerned I wasn't afraid of dying, but I was afraid of how I was going to die. And I'd read an article in a woman's magazine all about voluntary euthanasia, and there was a form to fill in if you wanted to join, and I did. Anyway, many, many years later, I got a call from Dignity in Dying. But sadly, hang on a minute, before that, sorry, I had already made up my mind I was going to put a petition in at Tynwald. And I did in 2014. I took a petition to Tynwald asking for, you know, assisted dying. And I also took a petition 5 years ago. Now, both these petitions I put in before I developed cancer and before I lost my son to cancer in 2021. Now, let me tell you, in 2017, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. In the August, my nephew, who lives in Holland, where assisted dying is legal, his partner was diagnosed with stomach cancer. And sadly, she left it a bit too late and she suffered terrible. She didn't want to go into hospital. She wanted my nephew to look after her, to look after at home. So he did. But she also signed up to assisted dying. He said, Auntie Mill, he said, although she was all skin and bone, he said she was a dead weight. He says, I'm trying to take her to the toilet. He said, she was such a lady, she wouldn't use a commode. He said, on the final night, he says, I was almost dragging her to the toilet, bless her. And everything came away, all over, everything. And he said, okay, Rob, it's time. So he called he called the doctors, and next day the family were allowed to come in and say their goodbyes. They were allowed to stay till 6 o'clock. At 7 o'clock, the first doctor came, gave her a sedation. At 9 o'clock, the second doctor came and gave her whatever it is they give. He said after the doctor left, he said, I climbed into bed with her. He said, I cuddled her in. He said, she was snoring her little head off, Auntie Mill, just like she normally does. He said, we both fell asleep. He said, but in the morning she passed over. He said, no more pain. I said, Rob, would you mind if I, you know, mention this on the camp, during my campaign here on the island?
Oh, I'm sorry, Millie, your phone line is absolutely cracking up. We'll try and call you back with a better phone line, but we got the start of that, but not the rest of it, so we'll try and call you back. We understand, by the way, that a section of the mountain road from the Victory Cafe to the Cregner Bar is shut. A message just in. A section of the mountain road from the Victory Cafe to the Craig is shut. And Howard's on with us now. Hi, Howard.
Hello, Andy. I wasn't going to come on, but I've just listened to the debate on the Summerland site. It's a tragedy we all know and we all appreciate. But do you remember, I'm not quite sure, with Sefton Group, I think they were all tied in together in the palace, but lined up in amongst the directors, etc., was Sir Dudley Cunliffe Owen. And he had ideas of building a place, the name will maybe ring a bell, called The Wave, on the Summerland site. But in the meantime, this group of business people had been going around buying up various properties all over different parts of the island, largely in Douglas, and the site down at the bottom of Walpole Avenue, down at the parade, as they call it. That was one of the sites. They bought the houses, demolished them, and that site has remained empty, and there are paper drawings being put forward for a new casino, a car park and heaven, but there's nothing materialised. And this is what's going to happen, possibly, to the Summerland site if they say, well, we're going to hold it all back. You're going to have to get somebody in there. It's going to have to be done. The original Summerland that burnt down, when they put the lower section in, it was basically a sports hall. And there was a discussion, a debate, and they decided to continue calling that Summerland, yeah, because people would still refer to it as the old Summerland or Summerland. But be careful what is being wished for, because if they're talking about selling the sites and this, that and the other, that site has been empty for a very good reason. The people up above in the houses, I'm led to believe they wanted some serious work done to the cliff, the rock face, which was going to cost a very large amount of money to stabilise.
Yeah.
And that is why I've been told that part of that concrete structure that was the old swimming baths remains there, because it is part of the supporting walls that are holding what is a crumbling rock face.
Yeah, I seem to remember, I don't know whether you recall, I'm trying to remember, it may have been the two Messrs Priest who were behind a proposal, and they, I remember at the time, it was going to be apartments, and they contended, they said that they could fix the cliff face. It could be fixed and it could be made safe to put apartments there.
No doubt it would be. It's not physically impossible, because it's been done all over the world. And they're doing it all the time. You look at Bulgham. That's got stainless steel netting. I think it's stainless steel. It doesn't seem to rust anyway. Bulgham, that was continually falling away, crumbling away bit by bit. And they came in, a company came in and done all that, and that's been like that for a long number of years. And it's not impossible to fix that cliff face, but the buildings up above, the people that own them, and rightly so, they want that now that it's been opened out to the elements again, they would want that fixing and made secure, because their properties then are on an area where it's going to possibly fall away.
Well, it's a long way to fall.
It is, and I can remember that opening up, and the manager, it was Trust House 40s that had that, first of all, the manager, Mr. Beatles, strange enough, and the place was, it was a brilliant idea, but unfortunately, and they prosecuted, or they didn't prosecute, what was the cause of it, and that was a fire in a little hut at the back of the building. But, as I say, be careful, because some of these companies come in, it's a classic example down there at Lord Street now, that's been empty for God knows how many years. The one at the end of Orthwell Avenue has been empty, and they hand these things over to other people, then you're going to end up with brownfield sites just moving around, not getting developed, but moving around the people who are making money out of just the site itself.
Okay, all right, appreciate that. Thanks, Howard, good to talk to you.
Take care, bye now.
18 minutes to one on Manx Radio, and Howard was talking about Walpole Avenue, and that's, well, Middlemarch at the moment it is. I think there was a one of the original Noble's Baths was there years ago. But do you remember the Royalty Cinema that used to be on Walpole Avenue? Well, the Royalty Cinema ended up as, I think it was a DIY warehouse, wasn't it? But the Royalty Cinema then became the home to an insurance company. And it's a fine building. It's very well done. There's a big figurehead on there. I think it was Amanda Bredner who designed that figurehead. Looks great. So it can be done, and nobody ever laments the passing of the Royalty Cinema, because there's something nice that's replaced it. So what do you think should happen to Summerland? Well, as I mentioned, the Manx Development Corporation is in charge of it, and the boss of the Manx Development Corporation is Dane Harrop. On Summerland.
When I first started in this role, the prime kind of brownfield site that we always use as an example was Summerland. We've undertaken a number of surveys on Summerland. You know, there's no secret behind that. We had people abseiling down the cliff to fully understand what work needed to be done. And that's about understanding the site, trying to assess what the risks are, so then you can either mitigate them, include for them, and price them in, so you're making sure that you're getting your number as robust as possible. So again, we've done the surveys on that. Currently, we haven't progressed that any further, and it's probably worth outlining how the Manx Development Corporation, what projects they look at, and what we're given the kind of green light to do. So we have what's called the Brownfield Regeneration Steering Group, which is the only subcommittee of COMIN that has the Treasury Minister, Cabinet Minister and Department for Enterprise Minister on the steering group. And ultimately we have been asked to look at a number of sites. We look at feasibilities, we present that to that steering group, and they approve at various gateways us moving forward to the point where hopefully we get onto site and we get a bucket in the ground.
You've mentioned the Summerland site. What are the obstacles to the development of that site? Because I'm guessing a lot of people would think, you know, the reason it was developed as a tourist site in the first place is because it's got a beautiful view across Douglas Bay.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great location. So Why is nothing happening on that?
There's a number of sites, you know, in terms of the size and scale of them, that demand large projects. And as we've outlined, large projects come with a large expense. At the moment, we've outlined what the risks are. You know, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to drive past that site and understand what those risks are. Obviously, the cliff that's still got a good proportion of the aquadrome still on the side of it is there. You know, we've got made ground that we'd have to deal with. So I think, you know, there's a lot of complexities around Summerland. We know the history around the site as well. And I think anything that is proposed there needs to be carefully considered.
There he is, Dale Harrop, the Managing Director of the Manx Development Corporation. What's going to happen to Summerland?
At EVF service stations, you can fuel yourself as well as your vehicle. Hot and cold food to go, chilled drinks, and even lottery tickets too. Great choice and value to make life more convenient. Fill up, fuel up with Ellen Van In Fuels. Visit us at evf.co.im. Stocks and offers may vary between locations. Following a cardiac arrest, for every minute that passes without action, the chance of survival falls by 10%. However, act within 3 minutes using CPR and defibrillator, and the chance of survival can be as high as 70%.
A St John Ambulance CPR and defibrillator course teaches the essential skills required and gives students the confidence to know what to do in this kind of emergency. Find out more. Call St John Ambulance today on 674 387.
From our castles to our cottages, our museums, and the great Laxey Wheel. You'll find hidden treasures around every corner when you visit a Manx National Heritage site. Fill your summer making treasured memories with Manx National Heritage. Sites now open every day. By visiting, you help protect our treasured island for generations to come. Plan your visit today at manxnationalheritage.im.
Helmets are on and engines are revving, which only means one thing. The new season of the TT races is heating up. And no matter if you're at the track or in front of the telly, Tesco can help you fuel the fun. Choose from our range of ready-made snacks and drinks, prep for a picnic with our deli selection, or get ready for a grill up in the garden. So, put the pedal to the metal and visit your local store before the action starts. Tesco, every little helps.
Once upon a time, when slower motorbikes raced around the island...
There was no Manx radio in those days, of course.
What? Well, we soon got that fixed.
We are Radio TT.
And then there was no stopping us. We could bring you stories of amazing dedication.
I have actually spent 300 days standing outside the Highlander pub.
And riders who'll risk everything for that podium finish.
One guy last year was off work for 3 days with a broken flask.
I'm back in the Manx Radio archive room again, browsing the shelf marked Tourist Trophy, and I'll be waiting at the door to welcome you in this Thursday evening just after 6 o'clock, looking at the TT Festival in years gone by. Now, I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to close the door. These exhaust fumes get everywhere.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
13 minutes before one, noting from Alan, who said in the news today, the UK's been singled out as having the highest diesel prices in Europe, 155p per litre. What's that per gallon? Crikey. This has caused outrage amongst drivers and motoring organisations, but the Isle of Man can claim even dearer diesel prices than the UK mainland. As far as I can see, we're being charged 175.9p per litre of diesel. Is this correct? Says Alan. It's a scandal, says Alan. Can you tell me 175.9 per litre for diesel? Is that true? How much are you paying at the moment? Where's the cheapest? Where's the most expensive? And thanks to, oh, the spirit of Buddy Rich got in touch and said it was Amanda Barton who was the sculptor for the old Royalty Cinema. Millie's back. Hi, Millie.
Hi.
Where were we?
Right. We were where I had told you that my nephew's partner... sadly, got stomach cancer 3 months after I was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Right.
And she wanted to stay home. She didn't want to go into hospital. She wanted Rob to look after her. But she signed up to assist with dying. Rob said that she was, although she was skin and bone, and, you know, she was a dead weight to take her to the bathroom because she was too much of a lady to use the commode. He said on the final night, he was almost dragging her there, you know. He said, she was so weak and everything, and in horrendous pain. And he said that all of a sudden everything came away, everything. He said, and she said to Rob, she said, Rob, it's time now, call the doctor. Well, Rob got in touch with the doctor, and the next day, all the family was allowed to come and see her. They were allowed to stay till 6 o'clock to say their goodbyes. 7 o'clock, the doctor came in. He gave her a sedation. At 9 o'clock, the second doctor came, give her whatever it is to give her. After the doctor left, Rob said, I climbed into bed with her, Auntie Mill. He said, I cuddled her in. He said, she was snoring her little head off like she normally does. He made me laugh, you know. He said, but by the next morning, he said, she'd passed over. He said, all that pain gone, everything. I said, Rob, do you mind if I tell this story? Because I'm campaigning on the Isle of Man. I said, I took my first petition to Tynwald for assisted dying in 2014. He said, Auntie Mill, if it'll stop anybody going through that horrendous pain that Margaret went through, he says, you can tell anybody you want. Now, my son died in 2021 of squamous cell carcinoma. The cancer was literally eating his neck away, and I saw what it was doing to his neck. You can imagine what it was doing to his inside. He was in horrendous pain. I actually was going to kill him. I'd bought a bottle of vodka and somebody had told me how many tablets to take and I got them, but obviously, you know, I couldn't just do it like that. Day after day, I kept thinking, I'm going to do it today, I'm going to do it today, I'm going to do it today. I couldn't bear watching him.
Millie, what sort of state of mind must you have been in to consider taking your own son's life?
I brought him into this world, sorry. And when I saw him in so much pain, I thought it was my duty to take him out again. And that was horrendous. I'm sorry, I'll be all right in a minute. Just give me a minute. If these people who are against assisted dying, have they really watched somebody they love? Have they ever watched their child? Your child is your child, no matter what age. He was 51 years old, but he was my baby. And to watch him going through what he went through, and when I took the petition to the first petition to Tynwald, and we talked about it, and he said, Mum, I think you're doing the right thing, you know. Because, you know, we'd had friends and family die horrific deaths from cancer. And that's terrible to watch. But to watch your child dying of it and stand there helpless. Anyway, the morning I was going to do it, I went to his house. And when when the door was open, my daughter said, I'm not sure if it was my daughter or his wife, said, oh, he can't even swallow now. And I went and sat in the car and I broke my heart. And I thought, I've left it too late. He's going to have to continue like this till the end. And it was horrendous. It was absolutely horrendous. So all I can say to those people who are against assisted dying, I can only say that you've never, ever watched your child die. Because you would do anything to stop it, anything.
Okay.
And it's you know, when I spoke to our Rob, it was a sensitive subject. Now, to tell you the truth, I was afraid to talk to him about it, you know. But anyway, I plucked up the courage and he said, Auntie Mill, I'm so pleased you talked to me. He said, you tell anybody. He says, you know, he said, I watched Margaret go through. He said, you know, what she went through. And he said, if just you telling people out there about assisted dying will help, you know, even just one person, he says, you tell who you want.
Okay.
So that's why I've come on the radio today. And I'm sorry for having that bit breakdown.
Don't apologise for anything, Millie. We appreciate your calling. Okay. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you. Bye. Thanks for that, Millie. It's 7 minutes before one. We're out today. Remember, every Wednesday, because it's our 60th anniversary year, we delve into Kelly's eye in years gone by. And Peter Kelly looks at Hizzy today. The Steve Hislop statue is on Man in Line. The Lord Street development, says Roger. How many spaces are there currently? How many of the 81 spaces being made as part of the development will be for the apartments? Well, I think that they'll all be for the apartments, won't they? Therefore, where will those people park who park there daily? Well, it is unauthorised, Roger, but I get your point. But there is, opposite that site, the old Circus Beach, there's a big car park there. And I hear there are prospects for that site as well with the Manx Development Corporation. And when we get the Manx Development Corporation onto Man in Line, we'll ask him all about it. Thanks to Howie on the phones today. Back tomorrow.
WINT.
60 years serving you as the nation station. This is Manx Radio.
Kelly's Eye, brought to you by Ellis Brown Architects.
Peter, what's Kelly's Eye looking at today in the sunshine?
I'm looking at something which has at its base three legs and also has a thistle.
Yes, it does. I couldn't argue with that. It is a base. It's a base for a statue.
Statue, and there aren't many statues in the island. Public art is sadly lacking. But here in Onchan we have one now, and statue of a man with his arms folded, and he's looking out across Douglas Bay, and beneath his feet, between the thistle and the three legs, both of which, you know, have a reason, it says Steve Hislop, 1962-2003.
It also says this was unveiled by Jeff Duke OBE on the 5th of June 2005. We're talking TT, of course.
We are indeed. Steve Hislop was a champion, a world champion, I think, from recollection. It's a newly created garden where there used to be a garden, but the whole of the garden has been totally revamped and finished just in time for the unveiling of the statue on Mad Sunday 2005.
Now, the thistle and the three legs, you say, are significant. The thistle, obviously, is a Scottish connection, isn't it?
Well, that's, of course, where he was born. He was born in the Scottish border town of Hoyk, chose Onchan as his home latterly, and unfortunately, of course, he was killed not riding his motorbike, but in fact in a helicopter accident. The race fans wanted to commemorate him, so there was subscriptions, etc. Sufficient money raised, in fact, to pay for two statues, and one is going to be erected also in Hoyk. Locally, Jim Davison, I think, was coordinating, and he contacted me to see if the commissioners had anywhere in Onchan where the statue could go. The family didn't particularly want it to be on the TT course. How about this site? Because at that time, when the approach was made, Summerland was under discussion for being the site of the famous but never happened TT Museum, or the TT Experience, and so it would have been ideal, of course, overlooking that. But equally, in this position, you can see the statue from the promenade, or part of the promenade you come along, and for the family's sake, of course, it's not far away from home.
To complete the picture, of course, there are two large plaques there, one a little about Steve Hislop's life and the other one his race successes.
Listing all the victories, his Isle of Man TT victories and his other major victories.
Many of the most iconic buildings around the island have been designed by Ellis Brown Architects. Keep up with Ellis Brown today on Facebook or via ellisbrown.im.
Part of island life for 60 years. This is your Manx Radio.